Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. This is the podcast for you if you want to understand the secrets and systems world-class founders use to build their business, their body, and their brain. It's the weekend. That means it's mentor moments time. Every single weekend, I give you a brand new mentor, and today it's a special one. It's a great friend of mine, Mr. Andy Mackin. He is going to set us up for the week ahead by looking at two things. Number one, listen to Andy's mindset. Everything is mindset with Andy, and everything is mindset with elite entrepreneurs working at the top of their game. And second, listen to Andy's story about how he got where he is. There's a myth around there's a certain type of founder and they're born and they always go this way and they're teenage prodigies. None of that is true. Here is my chat with Andy Mackin, and he's going to expand our mindset and our outlook on where and how founders begin. And first, quick thank you to my great partners, Iconic.
If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from Iconic offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Iconic offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Iconic offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials for my audience. So, try it out for yourself for the day. Bring your team. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Iconic offices.
You never see the dots joining forward, but when you join them and look back, like, I'm almost 17 years into my second career. Like, so, it's 21 years. It seems long. It went in a blink. It really did. Like,
it sounds like you enjoyed it as well. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Yeah, absolutely. And I would do it again in the morning if I was an 18-year-old and somebody said, "Maybe sign me up."
Yeah, it's a great indication of someone that you make the best of it, no matter what you're doing.
Isn't that what life is about?
Yeah.
You make the best of everything. Like, I mean, you're presented with situations and choices all the time.
Yeah,
and it goes back to what we said there a minute ago. Like, it's you that has the ability. You're the one that decides whether to do something or not. Nobody else does that for you.
How do you go from 21 years in the Navy to a group of companies? Tell me that story, because you told me a little bit last week, and I was telling my wife about it this morning. It's an incredible story.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, I hear people say an incredible story, but there's guys that have done it and are doing it all the time. I never in a month of Sundays would have thought I was ever going to be running a company or a group of companies ever while I was in the Navy. But I always said when I joined that I would do my 21 and that I would do other things then, because I think it's like anything else. If you're there for until you're 60, you become institutionalized, or if you do 31 years or 35 years or 40 years, you're institutionalized then into that culture, and it's very hard to make a break. And the people do it, absolutely. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it does make it difficult. So I always said I'd do my 21. So I would have been involved with PD4A, which was the representative association for the Defence Forces. And I got elected to assistant health and safety officer at national level. So I would have had to go to Dublin once a month just for national meetings and brief the guys on any issues that were going on in the barracks, the aerodromes or the naval base. And I really enjoyed it, but I had no qualification in it. So you have guys ringing you up and saying, "Andy, listen, we're building an extension in the barracks there. There's a couple of guys breaking down the fence. Do we need signage, or what do we have to do?" I said, "Look, lads, I don't know, but I'll find out for you." So I used to go off and research, get them all the information, and send it off to them. Mm. And I kind of said to the general secretary one day, I said, "Gary, I really should have some kind of course that I should, feel that I could give or impart advice that I actually know what I'm talking about." So he said, "Look, have a look and see what's out there." So I went off and looked, and there was a certificate in health and safety. So I went off and did that, and really enjoyed it. And I said, "Actually, maybe I'll go off and do the diploma, because that'd be something to do." So by night then, I did the diploma in UCC and loved it. And then I kind of said, actually, maybe this is something that I might like to do when I finish up. So that would have been about, I think I qualified in 2003. And I would have been working then on different projects for the Naval Service and for PD4A on health and safety issues and stuff, which was good training for me as well. I mean, doing risk assessments on a ship with explosives and ammunition was a pretty good learning curve. But it was good. I really enjoyed it. And 2004, then I kind of had my eye in the door then for 2006 when I would have been retiring, and I said, look, I'm going to give it a go. And I set up my safety business then. And basically, from there, it was like very haphazard. It was like a half day here, a Saturday morning there, with guys that I had that I knew that had moved on from the Navy and started electrical companies and construction companies. And said, look, Andy, will you come in and have a look at our risk assessments or see how we're doing? And kind of got a feel for it. And I said, you know what? This is actually not bad. I actually kind of enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying this. So I remember chatting to my wife, Mary, and I said, look, I think this will be really, really doable. I said, if I do 2 or 3 days a week of the consultancy and a pension, I said, you know, that will give me a chance to keep an eye on the boys and stuff, and you know, take the pressure off your mother and stuff, because her mother was doing a lot of the child money for us. And she still to this day will just poke me every now and then, whatever happened to that 2 day a week, 3 day a week scenario. I'm probably working harder now than I ever worked. But yeah, but by 2006 came around to actually retire, we probably had 5 or 6, maybe 7 consistent clients that were coming back for regular stuff, and probably another 10, 15, 20 clients that would pop in maybe once a year for stuff, update stuff. So I said, yeah, we're going to be fine. And I'm a Dundalk man, Gary, I'm not proud. I'd have swept the shelves and floors in Super Value if I had to. So it didn't bother me. So, and it was nice having the safety net, knowing the pension was there and the mortgage was covered and we're not going to be chucked out in the street. But it was still a gamble, because I was coming out of something that I did for 21 years that was a really, really good support network. You knew, hail, rain or snow, economies up and down, that you're in the Defence Forces, you're getting paid every week, your bills are going to be paid, the mortgage is going to be paid. So, but look, I was enjoying it, and I give it a lash. And then, yeah, it just kind of took off from there. So I took on my first employee in 2007, I moved to the office because the toy room that I was occupying here, and I called it the toy room because it was literally where the two guys used to have all their toys. There was so many folders in there. There was actually more folders than toys. So I said, okay, this is time to get a small bit more real now. And again, I was working all hours of the night. My wife would often say, look, I'm just nipping down to my mum's, I'll be back in an hour. She'd be back and gone to bed, and I'd still be on the computer at 2 o'clock in the morning, then trying to get up at 5:30 or 6 to head to Waterford to be on site. So that's the worst thing about having the office at home. Probably a topic of conversation for remote working as well, because people tend to put in more hours than they think. But I said, to have some kind of a structure, I said, I need to get out of here. So I rented a little office in Mayfield with €700 a month. And I went to Marion and said, €700 a month, are you going to be able to do? Yeah. I was going to go, oh, it'd be grand. Look, it'll be fine. She goes, I know, but it's €700. I'm doing it anyway. I said, because at least when I turn the key in the office, whether it's 5:30, 7:00, 9:00, I'm done till the morning.
Yeah, you're there. Yeah.
Fast forward now, once technology has taken completely over, and you're never done.
Full circle. You're back again in the toy room.
But the philosophy, was right. No, I was thinking, okay, at least there's a bit of structure in it anyway. And yeah, took on our first employee then the following year, Trish, who was the office manager, basically showed me the lesson of taking people on when you need to take them on, because I was doing literally everything. Yeah. I was invoicing, I was editing, I was doing the work, I was just ridiculous stuff, kind of doing the business development, and just having somebody to take the phone calls, get your list of messages, I've invoiced this, that's in the bank. It was brilliant. And something that kind of stood to me along the line then, saying, look, yeah, okay, if you're getting stretched, you need to have a look. Do we need somebody? What are they going to do? What's their role going to be? And so on and so forth.
How did that jump happen though, Andy? Because what I found really interesting about your story was, oh, I'll just do 2 days a week. And you were still doing the other job as well, which I found really interesting, is that overlap. And it just goes to reinforce the point, there's no one way of starting. Everyone feels like it's been glamorized to like, oh, just burn the boats and go for it helter skelter, and you must be turning over massive money in your first year. It just reinforces the point, there's no one way to start a business. But how did you go then from those 2 days a week, you know, yourself just in the toy room, to hiring your first employee? Like, where did those, you touched on earlier about your first clients coming from people you knew. So is that where you tapped into that network? Is that how you grow? Because I think that's the crunch that a lot of people get stuck on. Oh, I have this great idea, I just don't know where my customers are.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very, very good question, Gary. So I'll go back to 2004. So when I actually set up the business, I was still in the Navy, as I said. I got introduced to BNI, which is a business network group. And I went along to it, and I kind of just got it straight away. It was like a table of all select businesses. No one category was the same, and they helped out each other. So I was kind of saying, okay, this is people getting on with people. This is the kind of typical stuff that you would have in business, is know, like, and trust. And people like doing business with people that they know, like, and trust. So it goes back to my days in the hotel, how you treat people, how you get on with people, how you work with people always pays it forward. And I'll give you an example of that in a minute. So I joined BNI while I was still in the Navy. So I used to get up at 6 o'clock, head in for 6:30, do my BNI meeting on a Wednesday morning, and helter skelter down to the hall bowling for 9 o'clock. So that I wasn't going to be affecting any of the work that needed to be done. But that was invaluable. I mean, the training that I got in that, just in terms of how to present yourself, how to do your 60-second pitch, that was phenomenal for me. I mean, that was just kind of mind-changing for me, because it was just showing you how to present to people in a different way. Because not everybody is like you. Like, there is people from all walks of life, and you're pitching people from all walks of life. So that was brilliant. So I definitely got probably 4 or 5 fantastic contracts out of people keeping an eye out. You know, somebody says sentence safety, I've got a really good guy, actually, I can introduce you to him. And that's worth his weight in gold. So when I seen that kind of building, then I kind of said, okay, networking is very important. That was generating the sales, that was generating business. But it came to a point where I physically couldn't do it all myself. And the 2 days a week then, you know, it wasn't 2 days a week. It quickly transgressed into 5 days a week, and probably half day on a Saturday, and maybe an hour or two on a Saturday evening, having your glass of wine, just getting the last few invoices out before you typically took a rest day on a Sunday. I always tried not to work on a Sunday. But I mean, when I started off, you have to do the hours. I mean, I was a manual handling trainer as well. So I'd often do training on Saturday morning. There was an extra gig. You knew you were getting paid straight away because it was cash and delivery for the training. So that money was in the bank then from 1 a.m. So any bills that needed to be done. But then when you're doing everything, you quickly realize that you can't do everything. And if you think you can do everything, and everybody does, everybody thinks, oh no, look, yeah, it's a bullet that everybody has to fucking take at some stage, because you just burn yourself out. You will just physically, I mean, I was probably doing that. And I remember going to my doctor and he said, geez, your blood pressure's all over the shop. But I was like rushing around the place like a madman, eating rolls in the car and driving down there, like getting to one site to another, getting to the next client. And you think you're doing fantastic, but you're really, you're burning both ends of the string, and eventually it meets in the middle. And we all know what happens then, you know? So I took a kind of strategic view in it then. I said, look, no, I've got to make a decision here now. I moved to the office, that's fine. Carried on for a while. I said, right, I need help. And the natural progression for me then at that point was to get somebody in to manage the invoicing, manage all the phone calls, any emails that were coming in, to just take the pressure off me, to give me the time to actually work on the project stuff.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Andy. After listening back to that mentor moment, it's time to get Andy back on. He's gone back on the list. Andy, if you're listening, shoot me a mail. Let's set this up for Q4. Hope you enjoyed mentor moments. I get a lot out of making these episodes, so I hope you got a lot out of listening to them on your weekend to prepare you for a big week ahead. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Apple or Spotify, please hit subscribe. And if you're listening on YouTube, hit like, because it helps the podcast to grow. I will see you back here on Tuesday for a brand new episode. Until then, have an incredible week.